I am here with President and Sister Eyring, and I am here to talk to them about their devotional talks coming up today. How are you guys doing?
We're happy to be here.
Very well, thank you.
And last devotional, Sister Eyring was not able to attend because of a broken foot. How are you? Is everything good?
It is healed, and I am feeling very lucky to be able to be here with them today.
That's good. I'm glad to hear that. And I was able to read over the talks, and I am really excited for these topics. And I think a lot of students need to get that, you know, encouragement, especially starting off the semester. So I'm really excited for them. And Sister Eyring, you mentioned how you feel like you're kind of like our students are sort of an extended part of your family. Do you feel like you're kind of like that mother figure here on campus?
Well, I would be so honored. I know they all have their own mothers, but many of them are living far away from their mothers. And so I would be so honored to be able to play a little bit of that role, because we've had three of our children here at BYU-Idaho, and I know they were looking for direction. I thought maybe this was a moment when I could share some of the things that I shared with them as they tried to figure out their life's puzzle and their plan for what they were doing here at school in the frame of a mother.
Yeah, and I know for me, coming from Texas and my first few semesters, I was like, oh my gosh, this is all new. I've never been to Idaho before. So it's nice to see, you know, kind of a couple figure and you know, a loving husband and wife, and you're just like, oh, that kind of reminds me of my parents. So as for me, thank you. And you also mentioned in your talk, you kind of talked a little bit about how our lives are like puzzle pieces. And I love to make, like, to build puzzles. Like, I did that with my mom growing up. We would spend hours building 5,000-piece puzzles, and we would get really frustrated and just leave them there for a few days and then come back to them. But can you explain to us how you think our lives are like puzzles?
Sure, I'd be happy to. I'm actually drawing on something that Jackie Nygaard, a math professor, used last semester in his devotional, and it is about a puzzle and how to figure out how to put together that puzzle. In our home, we have a table in our family room that there is a puzzle going almost always. There's always a puzzle sitting out that people can stop by and sit and work on, and we tend to do that together. But we've learned some different strategies, finding edge pieces first and working on a spot, like you said. And if you can't get a spot, maybe you step away. But I think it's a great analogy for our lives. Sure, we'd all love to see the end first and know that it all, but we actually know that. We've been told that our lives have a plan and that there is a completed picture. We just can't see it all yet. And so to be able to work on those little pieces with the assistance of professors here and our roommates and our parents at home and our families, but to be able to work on that puzzle and know that it really will turn out in the end if we're patient and if we listen for the Holy Ghost to guide us, it's like a puzzle, a great puzzle, a fun puzzle.
Yeah, and I know for me, when I build puzzles, and this analogy kind of came into mind when I was reading your talk, how when I'm building a puzzle, I want to fit a piece. I was like, I know that fits, and it just doesn't. And I think I applied it to my life where I was just like, I think there's moments where I want something to work and I want something to, you know, benefit me, but I know it's not the overall picture. It doesn't fit the overall photo. Like you said, the overall photo. So I really like this analogy just because, I mean, again, I'm an avid puzzle piece maker. And just from my own personal, is there a puzzle right now that you guys are working on?
We just completed one just a day or two ago. It was, what was it?
A Ravensburger puzzle out of Germany, which shows, I think, 99 different scenes from around the world.
Oh, wow.
And so Yellowstone is one of those. And I think they're probably more of their share in the United States and Germany than other places, because the puzzle makers, it was made in Germany and it's probably sold a lot in the United States. But So it's got Utah arches and the Grand Canyon, and most of the puzzles that we do are of single scenes, but this one was unusually educational for us.
We try to pick puzzles that are from places that mean something to us, or yeah,
that's cool. Yeah, and you also mentioned how there's a lot of opportunities, and we are placed with a lot of people on this campus that help us build those puzzles. What are some of those that come to your mind?
Well, of course, your professors in each of your classes, that's really important, and they are there to help and assist you. But you have each other, and we hope President Irene gave a devotional last semester, about helping each other. And we really hope that you do that, that you help each other. Sometimes someone else has a perspective that you don't, and they can really assist you. Your roommates living, the principals in your apartments will help you. Your wards, you've got bishops and opportunities there in your ward to associate with people. This campus is rich with opportunities to seek help from other people as you try to figure out what you're supposed to be doing.
And President Eyring, in your talk, you tied them really well together. And I wish I would have heard this when I was my first semester, my second semester, just because, just like what you said, I had no idea what I was doing my first few semesters. And you shared a story how you weren't sure about what you wanted to do or what you wanted to kind of pursue. Can you share that experience?
Yeah, actually, in my case, I was so confident when I was a young man, and I had fallen in love with geology here in Rexburg. In fact, in the first week that my family arrived here in 1971, and I was still 7 years old, we had members of the geology faculty take me out into the field, and they gave me a hammer to swing at rocks with, and they gave me stories of the way mountains were created, and I was hooked on geology. And the field trips that we enjoyed in the succeeding 6 years only made me more excited. And so when time came as a senior in high school for me to declare my major, I checked the box that said geology and very much enjoyed the study of that in college, but I was instrumentalist in the way I studied, meaning I wanted to make sure I got really good grades above all. And my goal was actually not to be a professional geologist, but to go to the Harvard Business School like my father did. And I knew that the business school admissions people at HBS looked favorably upon science degrees. And so I thought, this will be wonderful. I'll win admission, and I'll do it without getting the minimum of 2 years work experience that was recommended. So I was a young man in a big hurry. And I applied to only one school. And when the rejection letter came back, and it arrived 1 month after we were married, it just turned my world upside down, and I had no backup plan. And the challenge was that not only was I not really well prepared to work in geology, I'd never gone on any field trip that wasn't required, for instance. I not only had that problem, but the price of oil was plummeting. And the energy markets, oil and gas, are what determine the hiring of geologists, especially young ones, new ones, without master's degrees or PhDs. And so I was effectively unemployable and couldn't get into business school. They said, you're a good candidate. Apply after you get some full-time work experience. And I didn't see a way to get full-time work experience. So as they say, the best laid plans of mice and men often go awry. And I was stuck, partially because I had been too sure of myself and too narrow in what I did. So in today's remarks, I'll talk about the value of creating some balance, especially a combination of what I call hard and soft skills. So geology, I think, qualifies largely as a hard skill. You know, lots of equations and learning to do mathematics and look at maps, create maps. But I didn't have anything other than a high school-based love of literature and history. And thank heaven for that, because the literature and history helped me when I went to law school, which hadn't been part of my plan. And so the theme that I'll touch on today is that while it's very important to be planning-oriented, to have your best guess about where you're going, you don't want to be too narrow in that and too sure of yourself. You both want to broaden yourself in your education and have some fallback options. And heaven has blessed me to learn the value of fallback options, but I learned it the hard way.
Yeah, and I know, at least in my experience, I came here as a political science major, and I was like, I know I want to go to law school and I want to become a lawyer. And as soon as, like, my first semester, I was like, this isn't going to work. I had no idea what I wanted to do. But then as I switched my major, I realized that taking those classes really helped me understand so many other things. And for that, I was very grateful, because kind of what you said in your talk today, learning different skills will apply to so many other things that you don't even realize. And so not just taking, you know, credits just because you want to take them, but really using credits to really help your skill sets and really learn more and kind of promote yourself in today's society.
Amen. Yeah, it's important to have a vision, even just a dream of what you might like to do, but then to really study that dream to see what is required to make it come true in terms of the skills required. And then also to set it up so that if things don't turn out exactly as you planned, you can still make a good life for yourself.
And Sister Irene, while you were in school, did you go through a phase where you didn't know what you wanted to do?
Yes, that happened for me. I initially started in dietetics, or at least that's where I thought I was headed. But for me, I could see that as I was progressing, that it would require an internship away for me. And my husband and I had made plans to be married, and I decided that going away probably wasn't going to really work for us at that time. And Henry asked me one day, he just said, what do you really love? What do you enjoy? And at that time, I said, I really like English. I wasn't sure how I was going to make the transition from what I'd been studying, but I was really grateful. And I did that, and I was able to finish. We were married. I was able to finish, and I graduated, three weeks before we had our first child. So things worked out. Heaven, if you're listening, heaven will guide you. And yes, you can make changes. And I'm grateful for the things that I studied in the area of dietetics, but I am really grateful that I was able to get my degree in English. I love them both. It was wonderful.
Yeah. And
she's a great cook.
Oh, well, I don't know.
I'm sure. And for students that are kind of on the verge of graduation and, you know, they have a few semesters left, what advice would you give them, you know? A lot of them are like, I just want to take easy classes that I know I'm going to pass. So kind of going back to the hard and soft skills, what advice would you give them?
Well, it's a great question, and you've posed the question in a challenging way, and that is there's constrained time. If it really is necessary, you might want to take an extra semester. But before you decided on that, you'd want to look hard at the kinds of jobs that you're interested in, talk to people in those jobs, and find out what are the skills they apply, not just the technical skills, but also the people skills, going back to this idea of hard skills and soft skills. And then just do a quick assessment and say, could I add a class or two? That on the one hand, it could be that, hey, I need to brush up on my mathematics, so I'll go back and I'll take maybe an accounting class even, so that I could be the person at the company who knows how to keep the books. On the other hand, it could be that you've been, like I was, a hard-headed scientist without enough soft skills. I had to pick those up along the way, and so maybe a class in organizational communication or organizational behavior or even theater might have been a good thing for me. You know, here I am at the moment acting as though I'm a media personality and I have no training in it. And if I could go back, I would get some training in speech and acting. And so it's never too late, even toward the end of your degree program, to go out and ask people who are doing the kinds of jobs that you'd like to have, hey, what skills do you apply that may not be obvious but are really important? And then to get that information and to come back and look at the catalog and talk to some faculty members. And the good news is that a single course can be quite broadening and mind-expanding. I look back as an undergraduate. I took a couple of elective literature courses, and I'd always loved English. And so when I did finally get into business school and became a management consultant, I was actually not better than the other folks at doing the numbers. But I liked writing. And so when it was time to make something more than just a PowerPoint presentation where you had to write with periods, stuff like that, I was comfortable. And who would have known that skill would differentiate me? And I really owe it to some great high school teachers.
I'm really excited to, again, listen to these talks and thank you guys for coming. I hope every student listens to Devotional because you will learn so much from these two talks today.
Well, thank you. We've enjoyed being with you.
Thank you so much. Great.